The Red Alert Radio team are taking a summer break and will be back live in February. Till then, they've chosen some of their best interviews from the last year, and we're going to be playing some of those for you now.
Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry Tukuingoa, ko Maunga Iki, Maunga Ika, te Maunga, ko Wairo te Awa, te Waitemata, te Whanga, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Kia ora, my name's Julie Ferry. I'm the Deputy Chair of the Pokitapapa Local Board and one of five Roskill Community Voice Reps on that Board of Auckland Council. We're part of the City Vision Centre-Left whānau, and frequent listeners may have noticed that I've changed my introduction slightly. Now, the reason for that is that recently the local board that I'm on has been doing some work with Ngāti Tamaoho on signing a relationship agreement. And in that process, we've been doing quite a bit of work around tikanga. And I've learnt that I was, unfortunately, with best of intentions, doing my pepeha a little bit wrong. And I was referring to the places that I feel connected to now, not the places that I was connected to growing up. And so previously I was referring to Pukitapapa, Pukiwiwi and Te Aonga, places in my area of Mount Roskill. But actually I grew up on the North Shore in Kaipatiki in Glenfield. So I've now made those changes to more accurately reflect where I'm from. And hopefully I'll be getting a little bit better at the pronunciation as I repeat it over time as well. So I hope that all makes sense. And I have a regular spot here on Red Alert Radio. Hopefully you've heard me before, if otherwise my explanation about my pepeha was probably a bit wasted on you. But I'm very keen to get your feedback, and you can find me really easily on social media because I have a funny last name. It's F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y, and I'm on Twitter and on Facebook. I'd love to hear from you. We also have a Red Alert Radio Facebook page. If you search for Red Alert Radio AKL, you should find us. We put up links to these shows as well as other relevant information. And we also have links to all of our past shows on the Red Alert Radio archive, which is on planetaudio.org.nz. Now, today, I'm really pleased to be speaking with Lois Naira from People at Risk Solutions, known as PARS. And this is something I've wanted to talk about for a while, and it's taken a little while to find the right person, and through the serendipity of the universe, Lois has contacted someone I know who's then gone, oh, I know you want to talk about this, so here we are today. And PARS and Lois's work is around volunteering for visiting and supporting prisoners after release from prison. So it's that rehabilitation, reintegration, hoping to help people to not end up back in those negative cycles that led to prison. So we'll talk a bit about the volunteer program and how vital this work is to having a humane and effective correction system, which may not be what we indeed have, but let's see how we go. And I'd like to really thank Lois for being on the show today. It's a real pleasure to have you here.
Tēnā koe, Julie. Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko Mamari to Waka, ko Parengaringa te Moana, ko Awa Poko te Awa, ko Tawhitirangi te Maunga, ko Waimerirangi te Whare, ko Pōtahi te Marae, ko Takao, tōku kāinga tūturu, no Te Ao Pauri me Ngāti Kuria Kuiwi.
Kia ora. So first up, a little bit of an introduction of People at Risk Solutions, which people are more commonly known as PARS. I know the name changed a while ago now, but often it takes a long time for initials to get into people's subconscious again. So what's the group about and what are its aims?
So PARS Incorporated, formerly known as Prisoners Aid and Rehabilitation Society of the Auckland District Incorporated, changed its name in November 2012. PARS has years of experience assisting the needs of prisoners, ex-prisoners and their families and whānau, delivering services inside and outside the prison, and probably more recently, deportees that have been flown back into New Zealand in the plane loads, really.
Yeah.
PARS Incorporated is a charitable organisation based in Mount Eden, providing services to prisoners in prisons from south of the Bombays to Cape Rianga in the north, and travel nationally to interview prisoners in their domiciled prisons under the Supported Accommodation Services Agreement. PAS is funded primarily by government and private prison contracts and donations. Our vision is freedom through growth. Our purpose is to assist prisoners, ex-prisoners and their whānau with practical assistance that enables them to access essential services at the right time and with the right support.
Great. So how did you become involved? What motivated you to get involved?
Well, my background is in social services, so I was a social work practitioner, community development worker for going on 38 years.
Yeah.
I've made a slight turn in the corner.
Yep.
I'm very passionate about issues pertaining to Māori and Pacifica, and in lieu that our statistics are so high in incarceration, domestic violence,
poverty.
I decided that I wanted to continue in this field. My previous role was working for an organisation called Pillars.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I worked there for a number of years working with children in whānau that had a parent in prison.
Yep.
And we also had a mentoring program there. A big part of me, what happens to our children is hugely large.
Yeah.
But for us to stop this, from my perspective, we need to bring the family back together.
Yeah.
So for me, I was asked by PAS to come in and support them in the volunteer program, which has always been a part of the organisation. And so I agreed to come in and give them a hand to get the mentoring program back in a place that is needed to support our, as we call them, mohiri, our re-offenders that come out of prison, to support our mohiri in our houses. And so my job is the community volunteer coordinator, and my position is to recruit mentors for the community mentoring program and other parts of the volunteering sector as well.
Yeah. And I want to acknowledge how important this work is too, up front. I think it's something that's quite invisible in a lot of sectors of society, and yet it's absolutely vital.
Yes.
And I don't know, but I imagine there's probably a lot of women doing this work who are undervalued and probably not rewarded as they ought to be, but acknowledging that the work has to be done.
Absolutely, it does. And I guess one of the, in joining PAS, and I've only recently joined them in the last 3 months, the majority of PAS is led by women.
Yeah.
But our men are just as vital and important.
Yes.
So a lot of most of our navigators are men, and our navigators are the first port for our prisoners coming out, so that they're the ones waiting for them when they come out.
And so what does a navigator do? So Lee gets released from prison.
Yep.
And he's been inside for 12 years.
Yep.
Having committed a really serious crime. What's the first step that a navigator takes with him?
Well, before the navigator even becomes involved, there's a process within corrections whereby a prisoner has nowhere to go, basically. Yeah. So they have case managers within the prison.
So this is nowhere to go when they're released. So they know their release is coming up.
They've got nowhere to go.
Yep.
They can't go back to whānau for various reasons, be it addictions, be it violence, but most of our men can't go home. The one thing that we do find is that for some unknown reason, women are able to keep the relationship with whānau, so find it easier to go back in, unlike our men.
That's really
They've kind of burnt their bridges, and kind of the doors have been shut on them by whānau. So once we know a pre-release is coming up, we have a kahurangi who's part of PAS, who's been with the organisation for 35 years, and she does the main assessment. So she's actually seen generations of prisoners as it is. So she gets, we get a referral to say that our prisoners on pre-release, usually a few weeks or before his release, and Vivi Lee goes in and does an assessment inside the prison. It's a very in-depth assessment. It takes over 2 hours, and the whole purpose is to plan the release from the moment he steps outside and moving forward, what are his goals and aspirations. Once that's done, it comes back to office, and our there are other processes, of course, but our navigators, who are predominantly mostly men, but we do have some women navigators as well,
yeah,
who will go, once we know the release date, we'll actually meet them at the gate of the prison.
Yeah.
And the first week of their release is spent where all their practical needs are met. So it could be opening up a bank account, getting their steps to freedom, getting their IRT number, getting ID, and all of those things, all the basic practical things that they worry about, because for many of them, some have been in there a long time, the system's changed.
Yeah, that's right.
Since they've been in there. So the navigator's role is to walk beside them and support them. And usually that can be done within a week.
Yeah.
And then, of course, once that's done, they're taken back to the either one of our residential houses. So PAS has single men's units in the city.
Yeah.
So they're sent. So those are four men that will live in a unit alone. And then we have community houses. So we've got two out in South Auckland.
Yeah.
And they're run more on a whānau basis. So they're overseen by house parents.
Yeah.
They live on the premises, and so the men go back to whichever the house they're going to, and they're inducted into the houses, you know, obviously. They need to know the rules. They need to commit to being there.
Yeah.
So the housing is usually 3 months, up to 3 months.
Wow.
Up to 3 months, and that's not a long time, really.
No.
With a view to where to next, so the navigator will plan with the mohiri. We've got 12 weeks, you're here, we need to start looking for housing, long-term housing. A task in itself, we all know the housing crisis that Auckland is in currently.
Yeah.
That can be an issue, but our navigators with the mohiri just constantly. And sometimes it's our prisoners want to be, our mohiri want to be very honest about who and what they are.
It's part of that process of change.
Unfortunately, for some, not all, that's not always, their honesty is also what is the barrier to stopping them from getting in because of the stigma attached to them. So, that's the navigator's role initially in supporting them.
So do you have enough beds?
No. We have waiting lists, so we do not have enough beds, not at all.
So what happens to someone on the waiting list? Do they stay in prison?
They do. You have them have to wait until there's accommodation. But there are other services such as MUMA, Emerge Aotearoa, who also provide. So it's kind of, you know, working together to see. But even with all of that, I don't know that there's enough housing still.
So, I mean, let's talk a little bit more about the housing aspect. And you mentioned the impact of the housing crisis generally. And one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is what that means for people who are particularly vulnerable. And in a lot of ways, it's hard to think of people who are more vulnerable than people who've just come out of an institution they've been living in for a number of years often and are having to adjust to the outside world. And all of the complexities that come with that. And so how do you see that? We know from Auckland Council and also Central Government have been working with LifeWise and similar organisations around an approach for homelessness called Housing First, where, I know you know about this, but for listeners, where the idea is that, you know, often there's a range of issues for a person who's got issues about housing. Often there's a whole lot of other stuff going on there, often, you know, addiction, mental health issues, all sorts of things, physical health issues too. And so the idea is, let's solve the housing first and then we can start working on the other things. And once people have secure housing, that gives them the basis, the strong foundation from which to address other problems. So I would imagine that Housing First approach is really essential for prisoners too. So how does that play out in a housing market where, you know, there'll be 9 or 10 groups of people going for every flat?
I can only talk from the stories that I've heard from some of our navigators and the constant, trying to support a Mohere to get long-term accommodation, and although PASS keeps them for up to 3 months, if they're in our housing and they've gone past their 3 month and we haven't found anything, we don't kick them out, obviously.
Yeah.
Some have stayed for longer.
Yeah.
And I guess what's probably really important to note is that PASS, as of recently, and probably the last couple of years, has been... is being referred the really highest end of the spectrum,
yeah,
prisoners coming out. So we're dealing with people that are sexual offenders.
Yeah.
We are dealing with men that have committed horrendous crimes. And that's because there's no one else wants to work with them. They're just too hard.
Yeah.
So PASS is kind of moving in that area. So just based on knowing that, it's our navigators wouldn't. Sometimes our navigators have to be very careful and say to our mohere, be very careful what you say when applying for houses, because that's going to be a barrier in regards to getting them in. But then there are some places that are really, really good. And then the mohere are quite, they want to be honest right from the onset. They know what they've done. They really want to try hard to turn their life around. Unfortunately, one of the things we find in PARS is that we call it the silent sentence. So they've already committed a crime. They've spent many years in prison. Yeah. Then they come back out. There are huge conditions in which they still have to comply with.
Yes,
and then
right.
all the discrimination, intimidation and everything else that follows from that. So it makes it very difficult for them.
That's really interesting, that silent sentence type of things, because I think with all the, you know, law and order discussion about three strikes and that kind of stuff, a lot of people just don't realise that if you've been imprisoned for, if you've been given a life sentence, you're actually on parole for life once you're out.
Yeah.
So it's not as if, you know, they just open the prison gates and out you go and, you know, and it's really, I think, helpful to have these kinds of conversations and make that stuff visible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you work much with Housing New Zealand on the housing issues? How do you find that? Because that's another thing that sometimes has come up where, you know, I'm aware of, for example, there's a housing development in Avondale, which is not going to be where a whole lot of prisoners are sent after release by corrections, but there's all these rumours in the community that that's what's going to happen. Now, the local MP has repeatedly got reassurances, she's had a community meeting, you know, this is not what's happening, folks, but the rumours persist, and it's really unhelpful, not just for that particular development, but also those stereotypes around, you know, what a place where mohere, former prisoners are living, would be like. And that's a Housing New Zealand development. So how do you work much with them?
I would imagine that would be part of our navigator's role.
Yeah.
And advocating on their behalf.
Yeah.
I couldn't say exactly what it is that they do.
Yeah.
But yeah, part of their role is to advocate very strongly on their behalf, on the mohere's behalf.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can only say that would be more the navigator's role.
Yeah, be part of the picture.
Part of the picture, definitely.
Yeah. And I know there's been stuff about people saying, oh, they don't want people paroled to Housing New Zealand properties, you know, for example, living with a family member who was in a Housing New Zealand property. And it's just sort of, well, where do you expect people to live? Housing New Zealand is the housing of last resort.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really supporting people to succeed once they're out, if they can't even find somewhere to live.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I mean, ultimately, many of them want to return home to their whānau, but it's a process.
Yeah.
And there is lots of, you know, restorative justice processes that need to happen for whānau to be able to, okay, you know, how do we bring them back after years and years of recidivism?
Yeah.
Histories of violence, whatever. So it's a big job.
And I guess also often crime will have been committed against members of the whānau.
Yes, yes, indeed, absolutely. Yes. You know, and I think for many, and I've been in and done a couple of assessments supporting our assessor, and for many, they would much prefer to stay in prison.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard. They know how hard every time they come out. I remember going in and one of the men said, just leave me here. I don't want to go.
Yeah.
I'm safe here. I'm not safe in the community, but I'm safe here. But he can't see, he's done his time, he's got to come out. And he said, and they'll come to the point where, well, if you release me and put me back in the community, I'll only commit another offence just to get back in here again. And so those are some of the stories that we hear.
Because there's a certainty and safety there,
yes,
actually, about being in prison.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
not the, you know, the stigma, the discrimination that they face. Yeah, it's hard. For them, it's really hard.
And I guess there's a certain amount of camaraderie too, whereas, you know, Mohiri walking around, you know, will have a sense that most people are not also Mohiri, but when you're in prison, you know, you're surrounded by other people who've had that, yeah, similar life experience,
yes,
for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I think that's the really, really important role, my role, in recruiting community mentors to actually support these men in our houses, to be able to, when things get hard, when they come out, to be able to pick the phone up and just say, I've got some dark thoughts going on in my head and I really need to talk to somebody, because they don't have that. So yeah, my role as recruiting community mentors or volunteers is exactly for that, where they can just pick up the phone at any time and just say, you know, I'm not well. I'm thinking. Oh, I want to go back in prison. I'm not coping. But that voice on the end of the line is actually can say to them, "And hang on a minute. Let's talk this through.
Yeah, we can work this out.
We can work this out. You know, and I'm here. And that's what's really important about the community mentoring role.
So let's talk a bit more about that. If someone's listening and they're thinking, oh, this is the kind of thing I want to put my hand up for, how do they get involved in that community mentoring?
Well, the community mentoring role is just to contact PARS, basically.
What's the best way to do that?
Oh, so the best way to do that...
Sorry, I should have warned you that I was going to ask you for the contact details.
So if they just contact info@pars.co.nz, and then also Auckland Volunteer has the site,
yep,
too, and if people contact Auckland Volunteer Auckland, then they forward any inquiries onto me.
Yep.
I then respond with an email and forward them a volunteer recruitment pack, talk about the specific responsibilities of that role,
yep,
and then they are interviewed. We have and very informal, just getting some background checks, but
yep,
the package involves police checking,
yeah,
a history about themselves, their interests, all those sorts of things, and then we have two lots of training, which is an orientation, so they're inducted into PARS, basically, to find out, so they know more exactly about what PARS does. It's about an hour and a half on orientation. Then a couple of weeks later, it's followed with quite an intensive training of about 3 hours.
Yep.
And that's really breaking down the roles,
yeah,
getting them to understand exactly what that role is and what they need to do within. Once they've got past that point, then they also have an induction into a correction site.
Yeah.
So a prison? Yes, inside in the prison. So,
yeah.
And that is really just about the ideal community mentoring role for me would be that we've done an assessment inside the prison. A prisoner who's ready to release says, I'd really like a community mentor when I come out.
Yeah.
I can then take I've already got a list of people,
yep,
and I'm going, I know the perfect person for you.
Yeah.
I can go back out, contact the community mentor I have in mind and maybe take him in, meet him from the inside, and then he's waiting for him at the gate.
Yeah.
So for me, that would be perfect. You know, they've already had that engagement.
Yeah.
And what that looks like, where although PARS is a mainstream organisation and contracted through corrections, we are kaupapa Māori focused.
Yeah.
So mentoring for us, and I don't like the word mentoring, but can be done in any way. So we like to look at it from a whānau context, so it can be one-on-one. And if it's one-on-one, it'll be men on men.
Yeah.
We have a lot of women that apply.
Yeah.
And so we've been creative. And what does that look like? Because these women want to become community mentors. But they come from, they've got some really, some great skills they bring with them. So I've actually had a small group of women say to me, Lois, you know, they do mindfulness, they do,
yeah,
counselling, they've done psychology, they do art. would it be okay if we had a small group where we could go into one of the houses and run some mindfulness groups with them? And I said, perfect.
Yep.
So I've got groups of women that are looking.
Yeah.
And if we take them into the houses, then the house parents are there, whoever manages the house is there. I can go along, so it's still in a safe environment. But we've also, I'm also in the process of working with the St. Columba Anglican Church, who have a small group of their own church members who would like to community mentor a mohini.
Right.
So we're working around what that looks like, and so they would like to take on one and then maybe two. Because they run a soup kitchen, he can become involved, teach them how to give back to the community.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, there's no hard and fast right or wrong way of how community mentoring works, and we're very open and creative and innovative in what it looks like for the individuals that want to volunteer.
Yeah, I guess you have to be.
Yeah.
It's that kind of work.
And it's scary for some, you know. I mean, I think the community mentoring role is probably one of the hardest for me to fill, and because I think people think of mentoring as one-on-one and then they get a bit scared.
Yeah.
But once we talk through, well, actually, no, it doesn't have to. And it doesn't. You don't even have to see them, because our community mentors are given a telephone.
Yeah.
We provide them with a phone. So their own personal details is kept there.
Yeah.
And if a mohiri wants to call them, he can ring them on the phone that's provided by PAS.
That's great.
So, yeah, it's but not, if people aren't able to commit to becoming a community mentor, then I recruit for three other. I call them, I recruit for four pods or four PO.
Yeah.
The main one, obviously, is community mentoring for our men that are in our houses.
Yep.
And deportees, of course.
Yep.
The other one is for prison visitors, for those that want to go and visit a prisoner that's serving 2+ years.
Yep.
Long services, who don't receive visitors.
Right.
So that's the prison visitor role. And in Auckland, we're covering four prisons. So we cover Paremuremo, Auckland Prison, Mount Eden, and the two Wiri prisons, the men and the women. So those are our four main prisons.
Yep.
But as far as the volunteering and recruiting and stuff, Ngāwhā is also part of our package as well.
Right.
So we've got a lot of prison visitor volunteers.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'm constantly looking for whānau transport drivers who would be prepared to pick up whānau in our community to take them to the prisons to visit their partners or family.
Because that's often a big issue, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. So that's the other. And then, of course, we do the generalist admin, which are already underway. PAS is 117 years old and unfortunately hasn't been able to keep up with uploading database, so we've got a crew already working through that at our head office.
That's great. So it sounds like anyone out there who's interested, we'll put some links up on our Facebook page, so it's Red Alert Radio AKL, but also just check out PAS, PARS.co.nz. There's heaps of information there on the web page. And I think it might be interesting, Lois, to get you back in to talk specifically about the deportees issue at some point or someone else from PAS.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think that's certainly I've done a number of interviews now about refugee issues, and then there's sort of that intersection there with the deportees coming from Australia and,
I think, sorry, Julie, just to add. So PAS, in the last couple of years, has formed a collaboration with a Māori health provider called Tūtuki Healthcare, and as our CEO likes to say, has given birth to a new organisation, Te Ira, whose primary role is working with whānau and youth, because our youth offending is increasing.
Yep.
So Te Ira's role is to support our youth and try and stop them before.
Great.
The presence.
Oh, well, so much more we could talk about.
Absolutely,
so we might have to turn this into a 2 or 3-parter, Lois. But we'll have to stop there for now. Thank you so much for coming in today, and all the best with this really important mahi. Listeners, you can get hold of me via Twitter or Facebook. You can listen again to this interview or any of our back catalogue via the Planet FM website, planetaudio.org.nz. Check out programs, and we are under R. This has been Julie Ferry for Red Alert Radio. Ka kite ana.